Hey, Chad, you want to watch a movie?
Yeah.
How about...
No, not again.
Okay, what about...
I just saw that last week.
Okay, oh, I got it.
Wait. You want me to watch what?
So, what did you think of Santa Claus, the movie?
I thought it was really fun.
I'm sorry.
Yes, indeed.
For those of you just joining us, willkommen.
Willkommen. Bienvenue. Welcome. Come on in.
Come on in. This is You Want Me to Watch What? Where every couple of weeks, Chad and I recommend a movie to the other that they haven't seen in order to broaden our horizons.
Yeah.
And
it's the last thing to not be broadened in my life.
First it was my waistline, and then...
ain't that the truth.
Yeah. So, keeping with the holiday theme we started last time, I chose the 1985 Santa Claus, colon, the movie. Like I said, it's from 1985, and it stars Dudley Moore and John Lithgow and David Huddleston as Santa. And it takes you through Santa's origins and then drops and then eventually ends up in what was modern day.
Yep. Olson Johnson himself.
Yep. So... let's go through the plot of the movie, and then we'll kind of talk about some of the behind the scenes stuff. So, starts out in the Middle Ages, and we see woodcutter Klaus, I forget how they pronounce it.
Yeah.
Delivering hand-carved toys to the children of the village with his wife, Anna. And their reindeers, Donner and Blitzen. They deliver the toys, and it's Christmas, and everybody's happy. And they're packing up to move on to the next village on the other side of the forest. They get caught in a blizzard, and they think they're goners. They can't see. The reindeer have fallen down. They can't do anything. Then a beam of light shows up, and it turns out it's the elves who live at the top of the world in the North Pole or whatever. And... the coming of Claus and his wife has been foretold to the elves for centuries, and he is now going to live with them and live forever and deliver their toys to the children of the world as Santa Claus. Ta-da! And so the next few minutes of the movie are them seeing the wonderful workshop and the world of the elves. All the toys, the colors, everything. You meet the other reindeer. You see the suit get built. It goes from green to red, and the sleigh, and you know, all the typical mythos that goes along with Santa. Then Burgess Meredith shows up.
Yep.
as the elder elf. With this really long ass beard and mustache that has to be carried by two attendants. And, he says.
What you don't know is that was just how Burgess Meredith showed up that day. that wasn't a bit.
I'd believe it. So he explains that. You know, you are to do this, you are to be Santa Claus, you can do it in one night because as you do this, you'll be surrounded by eternal night. So, you know, no stress, no worries. And they feed all the reindeer this magical reindeer food that makes them fly, and they take off, and history begins to unfold. And we see time passing through an hourglass and the various myths of Santa being added to how... the naughty and nice list shows up, and people leave cookies out for him.
I'll be checking it twice.
Twice, yep. they get a hold of the night before Christmas, and they get to the part where his, you know, belly shakes like a bowl full of jelly, and he's kind of offended. It's like, people see me like this? It's the cookies. It's all the cookies.
Cut to the shot of him eating a piece of celery. It's like
celery. Very dejected.
His wife just laughing at him.
So, move on through the years into the 20th century. And Santa's exhausted. The demand for toys has gotten worse over the centuries because there's more kids. And so the trip just takes longer and longer and longer, and he's exhausted. So it's decided he needs an assistant. And it comes down to Puffy, who wants to follow the old ways of hand-making the toys and whatnot, and Patch, played by Dudley Moore, who wants to kind of modernize things. So a contest is put into place. Whoever can make the most toys in X amount of time gets to be the assistant. Patch builds his machine and cranks out a bunch of toys and has the higher numbers, but they're subpar quality, which is evident the next Christmas when a lot of the toys break Christmas Day and get sent back, which is unheard of.
We've got returns.
Santa's workshop has this huge fireplace where all the letters drop into, and now suddenly there's broken toys dropping into. So, subplot number one. We are introduced to an orphan boy in New York City named Joe, who, I mean, he's living on the streets. He's fending for himself. He's trying to make do. And he has sort of made friends with Cornelia, a not-so-bad-off kid. She's orphaned herself, I believe, lives with her uncle, and is very well off. And they kind of form a friendship, and she helps take care of him and, you know, make sure he gets food and stuff like that. Santa sees that Joe is unhappy and introduces himself and shows him that he really is Santa and shows Joe that, hey, somebody cares about you, and it's me. I care about you.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, kind of drive around New York City in the sleigh and stuff like that. He meets up with Cornelia, and, you know, their friendship strengthens, and Santa goes off. Mm-hmm. Subplot number two.
Mm-hmm.
The BZ Toy Company. The BZ Toy Company, run by BZ, is the world's largest toy company.
Mm-hmm.
And they are under federal investigation for safety hazards. In fact, they have toys on as evidence. Like, they opened up a stuffed doll and dumped out sawdust and nails and screws and everything.
And broken pieces of glass.
And broken pieces of glass. And there's, you know... And so BZ, who is played by John Lithgow.
Oh, holy light.
Oh, yes. Is just this very sleazy businessman who's more worried about the bottom line than quality toys. BZ also happens to be Cornelia's step-uncle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the connective plot.
It all's connected.
It all comes together. So the toys get returned. The assistant job goes to Puffy instead, and Patch leaves the North Pole feeling dejected, like Santa doesn't appreciate him, doesn't like him, and he's going to prove himself worthy. Ends up in New York City, ends up in the sights of BZ, Patch promises BZ, if you give me the materials, I can make something special for all the kids. And... it will be amazing. And he does. He makes a sucker that, when eaten, lets the kids float.
For just a little while.
For just a little while and a little bit. Like, you know, there's a scene of one kid floating up to the top of the refrigerator to get cookies. So not very high and for not very long.
And but really, that kid just had a sucker.
Yeah, that kid just had a sucker, and he's going for cookies. But, you know, candy doesn't fill you up, so you're always hungry.
Cookies ain't going to help, buddy.
No, it's just carbs and sugar. Anyway, it's a huge success. Huge success. And BZ wants more. He wants something more.
He
something
is a
better.
Disney princess of the First Order.
He is. He wants something more so he can sell it in March as Christmas 2.
Christmas 2. It's going to be a thing.
It's going to be a thing.
St. Patrick's upset, but...
So, Patch reluctantly agrees because now that he's done this thing, he was going to go back to the North Pole and prove this and show Santa, hey, I did this thing. You like me, right? Well, he agrees to stay on a little longer to make the next big thing, which are going to be candy canes, which allow people to, no joke, fly like the reindeer. Unfortunately, the mixture, the recipe is a little screwy, and when the candy canes get too hot, they go boom.
They explode.
They explode. BZ's lawyer tells him about this, and he says, what does it matter? The kid, you know, we're still going to make a ton of money on it. Cornelia and Joe hear this, but get caught. And it's up to Santa to save Joe, who's been kidnapped and tied up. Patch gets to him first, frees him, and they take off in Patch's flying car back to the North Pole. In the meantime, Cornelia and Santa have figured out what's going on, and they try to catch up to Joe and Patch. The candy canes in the back of the flying car begin to explode, but through reindeer chicanery, they manage to save Patch and Joe and make their way back to the North Pole.
Well, it's that kind of movie.
It's that kind of movie. BZ is about to be arrested because Cornelia called the police on him. And they show up to arrest him, and he eats a whole bunch of the candy canes and begins to float off into the air. The movie ends with Santa agreeing to let Joe and Cornelia stay at the North Pole until next Christmas.
Well, they don't have parents anymore.
They don't have parents, yeah. So they're going to stay there till next Christmas, and we see BZ floating off into space. Credits. So this movie had a lot going for it.
Had a lot going on, certainly.
Yeah. So it was written by the same couple who wrote the first three Superman movies, specifically, or helped write, especially Superman the movie and Superman 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was made by what is his name?
Which, you want the director?
Ilya Salkind. Yeah, that's it.
Oh.
Who was the producer of Superman the movie. The score was done by Henry Mancini. And the song over the end credits, it's Christmas All Over the World, was sung by Sheena Easton, but it was originally tapped to be sung by Freddie Mercury. He had to drop out due to scheduling conflicts. So there's a lot going on in this movie on the back end, and it should have been a big hit, and it was a bomb. It didn't even make budget.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it had tie-ins with McDonald's and everything, and it was set up to be this big thing, and it just didn't quite meet expectations. But I saw it as a kid and I thought it was kind of cool, and I remembered it years later. And tell me your thoughts on it, my friend.
This is a song that it suffers from Superman 3 syndrome.
Yeah,
it is.
That's fair.
It is two movies that are trying to tell the same, like, it's trying to tell the same story, but it's doing it, it doesn't know exactly what its main point is. Is this the origin story of Santa Claus and the traditions and the mythology therein? Or is it a cautionary tale of, you know, 80s business practices in the Reagan era. you know, kind of thing. Because those are they're two very, very different movies. You know?
Yeah.
As soon as we introduce Joe, not even introducing BZ, as soon as we introduce Joe, the movie fundamentally changes.
Yes.
It's not bad that it changes. It just changes. We go from this kind of ethereal, you know, mythological state of the story into this, and now let's apply all this mythology to the real world. Well, you know, if they did that and it was the 1700s, maybe.
Maybe.
Except everybody who's watching this was around in the 80s.
Yeah.
So this is not nearly so bad a movie as the critics of the 80s said so.
No, it's, but lots of critics.
It's yeah. not even as bad a movie as John Lithgow has said it is. Because he named it as one of the tackiest movies he'd ever been in. Well,
that's saying something.
Here's the thing there, John. You had a big part of that tacky.
Yeah.
The way that your lips would wrap around that cigar with kind of its grotesque, you know, look, that's on you, brother.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently the film was very big in England.
Yes.
You know, it had its time and its day. I watched it with Darren. You know, had him over.
Hi, Darren.
He said it was one of his favorites. And in the first 10 minutes, right, Claus shows up with his wife and they're getting ready to go out in the big snowstorm. He's like, oh, my reindeer can find their way in any storm. And they start slowing down. I look at him and says, if we kill them reindeer in the first 10 minutes, I'm out. He said, okay, so stick with me here. And I'm like, you son of a... Gore, ram it!
They're just sleeping.
Because he related to me, and I guess it's his story to tell, but I'm going to do it anyway.
He's not here, so...
Well, was that the first time he watched it, it got to that part, and he, like, turned around to look at his grandparents like, why are we watching this? And there's just a few moments that are like that, right? Mm-hmm. That are like, that's a questionable decision. I don't know that I'm here for it. We didn't see near enough of Patch, of Dudley Moore's Patch, putting so much of himself into being Santa's assistant for him to just up and run away.
Yeah.
Because every indication from Santa was that I don't want you to leave. I want you to fix the problem.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing. And so there were bits of that that just from a storytelling perspective, it's like, I need just another couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, we can take a couple of minutes off of something else, but I need just another couple of minutes where we show Patch really just where his self-worth comes in, how he sees how Santa looks at him.
Yeah.
To make running away, or, you know, we need to have Santa act in such a way to actually give the impression. You know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had no problem having a Santa that was abusive and mean.
No, it didn't.
So, but ultimately, this was an enjoyable movie, in large part because I was watching it with somebody who liked it.
Yes.
Because then I could buy into his joy and his nostalgia. Because I have no nostalgia for it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I've known Dudley Moore in, like, two movies. You know? And I think the other one's Holy Moses. You know? I'm sure he was in more. That's just, you know, I really like John Lithgow. And I thought he was great in that role. Fun fact, they wanted a Gene Hackman and they offered the role to Harrison Ford.
I didn't know that.
And then they made offers to Dustin Hoffman and Burt Reynolds and Johnny Carson, who all said no.
You know what?
Yep. So, also, they wanted Carol O'Connor at first for Santa. Can you imagine? Huh. Can you imagine Archie Bunker as Santa?
Another reindeer have crapped in the floor again.
Will you get out of here?
Oh, Santa!
Yes! 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 That is exactly what we need. We... Oh. Yes. And otherwise, Ancient Elf, the Burgess Meredith, was originally written with James Cagney in mind. So, Anyway. This is a nostalgic movie. Very much so. Anybody who is listening to us now because you watched it when you were a kid, it's still great. You know, it's going to pull on all of those nostalgia vibes, because the mistakes and the things that are just like, I don't know about that, they all get washed over, because there's nothing that is bluntly and blatantly of the time.
Yeah.
Right? It's all because the colors are vivid. You know, they're going for a real timeless quality when it comes to Santa. And so you see it as they decided to set this second part in the 80s rather than, you know, trying to make the entire thing 80s. So the way that they shot it, that very soft focus style in the North Pole, lends it that timeless vibe that really works for it. Then when things sharpen up in New York, especially in John Lithgow's, like in the factories and so forth, it just kind of works.
Yeah.
If you didn't watch it, find somebody who did and watch it with them. It'll be a lot more fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Because if I'd watched this just by myself, I think I still would have enjoyed it, but I would have had my critic brain on, and I would have been seeing all of those little pieces, you know, the obviously puppeted reindeer.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, man. You know, Fraggle Rock was around this time, and that didn't... Why did the Fraggles look more realistic than the reindeer? You know what I mean?
Because the reindeer weren't done by Jim Henson.
Well, that's probably the case.
Yeah.
Granted, if they had, they might have all looked very different.
Yes.
So,
as the person who presented the movie, I agree. It's not a great movie.
But it's a good movie.
It's a good movie. And especially if you remember, even if you vaguely recall this from your childhood, watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
Just take the 90 minutes and watch it again. Mm-hmm. And just kind of, oh yeah, have that kind of thing.
So.
All right. So it's a see it from you with friends, especially somebody who's seen it. Same for me.
Yeah.
Awesome. And I think new year, new movies, your turn.
Ooh. I got an idea.
Okay.
Hello, Meat Popsicles. Why don't you grab your multipass, a drink, and come sit with us?
Let's pick each other's brain. We want you to be part of our intimate conversation
about science fiction topics.
Let's do this. Join us and let's talk about science fiction topics in books, movies, TV shows, and games.
At Science Fiction Remnant, you are invited to listen in.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
And don't forget your multipass.